Today's episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up with the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up to date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next. The views and opinions of this program are those of the host, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Bringing you the ag information you need, this is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Welcome to Market Talk, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Mike Pearson, sitting in for Jesse Allen this week. In the markets, it was a bit of a back and forth today. Ended up seeing some weakness develop in the corn market as well as in the soybean complex. Wheat saw mixed trade as the day was going on. We'll talk market factors with Ted Seifert here in just a moment. We're also going to get into the weather. Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien is looking ahead to what farmers could anticipate as they work to get that planting wrapped up. We see how this new crop emergence is going to work there in the field. Before we get into all of that, however, let's take a look at the markets. Ted Seifert, Zahner Ag Hedge, joins us today. And Ted, it would appear as we're watching the trade this morning, we've got mixed trade. Nothing really seems to grab traders' attention.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. It is pretty quiet out there at the moment. And, you know, that's maybe not a terrible thing. We had export sales this morning, which were also mixed. I'm going to say that the corn number was better than expected, even though it was a negative number. We knew we had that big cancellation from China. But unlike the week before, where we had other cancellations from smaller cancellations from smaller countries, you know, Costa Rica, Mexico, and so on and so forth, those cancellations didn't pile on top of it. We had some sales to offset that big cancellation from China. And again, it was negative 75,000 metric tons. But again, I'm going to call that a small victory for the corn.
All right.
Again, it's not something to be wildly bullish about, but a small victory. And then for soybeans, you had a positive number, 115,000 metric tons for old crop. There was really nothing existent for new crop. That might be a little disappointing. That might be why the November beans are lagging behind a little bit here today. But we're still making sales and export sales in beans, even though Brazil seemingly is a much better option for most. So yeah, that's kind of an interesting thing. And it is a little bit friendly for old crop beans. So you've got beans up just a little bit. And, you know, wheat's a little bit stronger, too. You did see some cancellations in old crop wheat, but this is the very last couple of days of that old crop export year, marketing year for wheat. And it really is just getting moved over towards new crop. Again, because that starts June 1st, right?
Right.
Really nothing to say about the wheat. The big thing that we saw, the real nice number that we saw, was the soybean meal number, which was really fantastic.
And Ted, that soybean meal number, Philippines stepped in. I believe it was the Philippines earlier this week, made that purchase, 200 and some thousand tons. Who else can buy our meal? Where else do you see this growth coming on the meal side? Or was this a one and done, do you think?
You know, okay, so the interesting thing about today's 341,000 metric tons of soybean meal sold last week, that's not including the Philippine number that we saw.
Oh.
That Philippine number will be on the export sales report for next week. So we already know that next week's soybean meal export sales will be really good. This week, the main contributors or the main buyers was Poland, 100,000 metric tons of Poland. I don't know why we didn't see that on a daily flash sale, by the way. And then unknown destinations for just shy of 50,000, Colombia for just shy of 50,000, Mexico for, you know, 25,000 roughly. I mean, other countries are stepping up to the plate. You know, EU is going to be interesting. We're going to get a lot of maybe atypical customers, I think.
I was going to ask, are these all Argentinian buyers that are scrambling, looking for new product?
We are taking some of that Argentinian market share. Now, here's the thing. We have a window of opportunity here for our soybean meal exports because Brazil is the second largest crusher in the world, by the way. Brazil is going to, I think, benefit more than we are from the lack of Argentinian sales. One, Brazil's going to probably sell Argentina a significant amount of soybeans. Two, Brazil's going to make up for some of those soybean meal exports. But The problem for Brazil right now is that they're just fresh off their harvest, getting product to port, or I'm sorry, getting the product to the crushers and then getting the meal to port. Again, there's this window of opportunity where we can see internationals come and buy our soybean meal. So that's going to be great. I'm a little skeptical that it'll be long lasting. I'm a little skeptical that it's going to reverse the decline in crush margins that we've been seeing over the course of the last few months.
Now, and that's, Ted, that's something you've been talking about here on this program. I know you've focused on it over the past year. Margins have been exceptional in soy crushing industry since 2020.
Yep.
Talk to us about how much they've narrowed. What have you seen in terms of margin shrink?
Yeah, so, you know, spot crush is below the five-year average for the first time in about 3 years.
Oof.
And a big part of that is soybean oil. You know, we got really excited about soybean oil for use in biodiesel. But then came along renewable diesel, and that has really cut into the market share of biodiesel. And it's a bit of a problem going forward. Not only that, I mean, you've got prices that have been declining in meal and oil, while soybean prices, yes, they're down, but have been relatively strong, which again takes away a little bit of that, well, a lot of that big incentive for crushers to not only crush at full capacity, but all these big crush operations expansion and new operations coming online that have been announced over the past couple of years. I think we're maybe a lot of these companies that haven't broken ground yet are maybe second guessing some of that. You know, I had seen some stats that we're going to see 700 million bushels of new demand between now and the end of 2027. I don't think that's actually going to come to fruition. I maybe 350 to 400. We will see an expansion. Don't think it's as aggressive as what we originally thought. But that's okay. I mean, look, any new demand, we're going to take it, right? New demand is a good thing. And overall, yes, we do have a new paradigm with new uses, new demand for soybean oil. It just might not be the big shining crown that we had talked about before. And again, that's being reflected in crush margins. Now, I think we've overcorrected crush margins from the big, you know, sort of record high margins that we had for a long period of time. At some point, I think we'll settle back in above that five-year average again. We'll continue to give crushers incentive to crush at a higher level and do some expansion. It's just not, they're not making money hand over fist like they had.
Right. Maybe it bloomed a little early. Now we got to let the industry mature. Ted, before we let you go, I love talking the cattle market, as you well know.
Yeah.
This is certainly an exciting time to talk about the market. June live cattle contract high this week. Additional strength today. Ted, where does it go from here?
Yeah, you know, that cold storage report coming in well below expectations. That's a really bullish thing. Domestic demand is very, very strong. And, you know, we keep talking about, recession and people are going to change their spending habits and they're not going to pay these higher prices in beef that they're finding at their butcher's counter. That's not the case. We are buying. We are consuming beef at a high level, at high prices. And when you do that in a supply situation that is maybe not as tight as originally advertised, but in a tight supply situation with weights coming down, marketing is being current, headed into the peak demand season, cash cattle just continues to be on fire. Man, you really don't see any cap to the live cattle market at the moment, unless consumers do change their spending habits. But you don't really see that on the horizon. I mean, we're all bracing for this recession that just hasn't really happened. We've seen some signs of it in certain sectors, but it hasn't been a economy-wide recession.
Right.
Again, the big thing being consumers have not changed their spending habits.
Yes. Well, that was Ted Seifert of Zahner Ag Hedge. Always appreciate Ted's expertise. And folks, stay with us. We'll have more market talk coming up in just a moment. We're going to chat with Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien about what to expect from a weather perspective. We'll also get thoughts from Arlen Suderman of StoneX.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Market Talk continues today. I'm Mike Pearson, sitting in for Jesse Allen this week. We are going to turn our focus to the weather, watching this crop emerge here across the Corn Belt. Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien joins us now. And Eric, what are the headlines in the world of weather here this week?
The headlines are fear over developing drought and then the incredibly heavy rains that are in the plains from north to south, from Texas all the way to Montana. And so there's a lot of folks in the Corn Belt that are seeing this dry stretch of weather that we're right now predicting could last, you know, through the first full week of June, plus some above average temperatures coming up as we get toward the beginning of June and start June. And it's just got a lot of folks worried that this might be something that goes on repeat, but there's some evidence against that. And so we're just watching it carefully because even though there's been some good rain this spring, there's some folks still that were missed, and a lot of people need more moisture in the soil to keep this crop going.
They do, Eric. I've been talking to growers from Central Missouri. Spoke with Chris Chin, the director of agriculture of Missouri here this past week. There are some real concerns there across the central part of that state in particular. Any relief or any setups developing to provide some relief, as you mentioned, maybe after that first week of June?
Yeah, so the hope is that we can get the large ridge that's sitting over the midsection of the country that just has absolutely no flow in it. I mean, there's just, you take the surface winds outside right now, they're about the same as they are if you go up, you know, 6 miles into the atmosphere. It's just so slow. And so therefore, you don't have anything to push this out. Well, we think that by the time we get past that first week of June, we're going to get a little bit better flow in the upper levels of the atmosphere, and this is going to help generate more summer thunderstorms. And if that's the case, these will be perfect rains because, you know, historically, if you look at it, I know it's a major worry for a lot of folks right now, especially in Missouri. You're right. Missouri's been this place that's been missed. Parts of southeastern Nebraska has been missed. My home state of Illinois, Michigan, I can find spots all over the Corn Belt that have been missed. But if we do get that better flow coming back in, then we'll start to see better storms. And like I said, historically, that tends to help a bit with yields to have a drier start and then deliver the rain later. So we'll just see if that's how 2023 is going to play out. Best evidence is right now that it will. We'll get some storms coming mid-June. But until then, boy, it's going to feel like a long wait through this dry spell.
So it's kind of a tale of two cities, that emerging dryness there in the central part of the Corn Belt you mentioned, Eric, but then also those deluges of rain we absolutely saw here over this past weekend in the farther western parts of the plains. Is that something that looks like it could continue?
It is, at least for the next probably 10 to 15 days. And so we just got a new drought monitor this morning. And if you look back over the last month, we have places in the Western Plains that have made a, I believe, up to a 3-class improvement in the drought, which is just incredible. It's hard to undo 18 months of drought in just a couple of weeks, but Mother Nature is trying to make up for some lost time there. Trouble is, you know, we do want to, that wheat crop, but that was destroyed by drought to get out, and now it's flooding in those areas. And so it's kind of a cruel punishment that the atmosphere is putting on those folks in the Western Plains. And some of these storms are just tossing massive hail. I've seen some just outrageous pictures of some of the large hail that's been in the Western Plains.
Absolutely. Those 5.5 inch, I think, was a number I saw floating around from some of these storms that can do some damage. Eric, I know it's early in the year and severe weather is a local phenomenon, but the fact that we have seen, it seems as though a pretty fair amount of severe weather. Can we determine if this is going to be an active severe year at all? Is that something meteorology can tell us?
Yeah, we can. You know, we can at least look at what the conditions might be that would lead to that. And if we see more ridging setting up in the jet stream over the western United States, it tends to give us flow later in the season. I'm talking about the end of June through July and August that comes out of the northwest. That's out of Canada, essentially, for the main Corn Belt. Once we get into those, you know, midsummer months, that tends to kick off big, long, linear, you know, storm systems, squall lines, or heaven forbid, another derecho or two. And so we're expecting to have an active middle of summer severe thunderstorm time period. So it's certainly top of mind for me. But, you know, it's like you said, we have a love-hate relationship with them. We need the rain. We hate the wind and we hate the hail. And we certainly hate the tornadoes out of them.
That is so true. Eric, one of the big themes we've been talking about meteorology over the past 3 years has been La Nina, and now that switch back into an El Nino. Are we technically in an El Nino environment right now? And if we are we seeing the impacts of that here domestically yet?
We're not seeing the impacts of it domestically just yet, although you could almost make an argument that we are, because you look historically, Junes are typically drier whenever you have a developing El Nino. But the El Nino has not yet fully arrived, and to say that it has arrived, we need to maintain ocean temperatures at least a half degree Celsius above normal, specifically in the central equatorial Pacific. That's one criteria. We also need to have the trade winds just stay weakened and actually at times have these westerly kicks to them. And then we need to see the atmosphere in the northern hemisphere starting to just kick off large ridges that are closer to the west coast versus over the Aleutian Islands. You say, well, what's that matter? Well, that's the setup for the pattern across the rest of the U.S. And right now, we're just waiting to see that. But we're, you know, there's other factors with this, like the Pacific Ocean versus the Atlantic Ocean. Both oceans have very hot temperatures, except right along the West Coast and then right along the Gulf Stream on either side of the country. It's very peculiar setup at this point. And by the way, speaking of that, today, the National Hurricane Center just released their latest update for the hurricane season, and they're keeping it right on about average with their numbers. And so last few years, we've been worried about above average. We thought it would be a below normal year this year because of El Nino, but some of the data they've got looking at those ocean temperatures and the current setup, looks like we might hit our normal numbers for hurricanes this year.
All right, Eric, let's go across the sea over to Europe. We've been seeing some interesting weather over the past 2 years in Europe. Last year, that catastrophic drought across so much of that wheat production territory. This year, the flooding in Italy paired with the drought in Spain. Eric, what's going on over there on the continent?
Well, we're all in this adjustment right now to the changes that have probably been most pronounced in the Pacific Ocean. And I know that's quite a long ways away from Europe, but it kind of sets off a bit of a, I almost think of it as like a chain reaction in the atmosphere. With the North Atlantic being so hot along the coast of Africa up to Europe, we've now seen that, you know, Spain got tucked inside of a large ridge, which just made it incredibly hot and dry for much of their spring. It's storming there now. But then you get into Southern Europe, like you mentioned, into, you know, parts of Germany down to Italy and then east of there, and they've had better storms. Now, Ukraine is one we got to watch carefully. They're a bit drier right now, but not alarmingly so. And the Russian wheat belt is expected to get decent precipitation going forward. And so that's going to be key to watch for our global markets.
All right, Eric, before we let you go, another story that popped onto my radar, weather adjacent, are these fires up in Canada, the province of Alberta, many wildfires earlier this week. Does it look like that western region of Canada is going to get a drink?
It did. And that's what's great. So earlier this week, we finally got some storms over that area. It quenched, you know, the thirst, I think, of those fires and started to knock them down. But still, even, you know, the last couple of days here, we've seen just a lot of the lingering smoke in the central United States, and it's got to get kicked out. But this comes back to what we first talked about. If you don't have the wind to kick it out, it just lingers. And that's what we're dealing with right now.
All right. Lots to watch on this weather front going forward. We've been speaking with Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien. And Eric, tell our listeners, how can they keep up to speed with your weather thoughts?
Yeah, we put a lot of stuff out on YouTube. So if you just go to YouTube and search Nutrien Ag Solutions, you'll find it there. Or I have a daily a newsletter that goes out. And a lot of folks that listen to this have been subscribed to that. And I know Jesse usually puts up that link, so we'll make sure that's on your site so people can get signed up if they want.
We will be sure to share that as well. Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien, thanks for joining us here today.
You bet.
Well, let's take the attention from global weather to global trade. Bloomberg runs a tracker. They call the Bloomberg Trade Tracker, and it has been very interesting to watch the way it has oscillated here throughout the pandemic. We've been talking a lot about the normalization of the world, Asia finally coming out of their COVID zero policies, hoping to see the global supply chains return to normal. However, for the May Global Trade Tracker there at Bloomberg, they note that 5 of the 10 indicators that comprise the tracker remain in below normal range here in the middle of May. Shipping and export volumes have weakened in major ports around the world. They do note that we are experiencing a small improvement from the month prior. 6 data points were in the red back in April. Now it's only 5. The sentiment is still somber, is Bloomberg's verdict on this, but they do note that it's improving steadily past stress points, notably those shipping delays and raw material costs, those commodity costs that we talk about so much here on Market Talk, are starting to come down. However, we're still grappling with a trend they call slowbalization, a play on globalization. What Bloomberg has found is that cross-border trade flows continue to slow down. There was the huge bout of globalization. We saw it in the 90s. It boomed again in the 2000s. Early parts of COVID, we saw it explode before cross-border restrictions started to weigh. And we have not yet seen trade remove or revive back above those points where it was in early COVID. Now, they do note that the electronics sector has been hard hit, but it is starting to find some optimism. Optimism that was probably seconded today in the equity markets. If you have not been paying attention to stocks so far today, early this morning, NVIDIA announced huge quarterly profits, $11 billion when the trade was expecting $7.5 billion, sent that stock on a tremendous move higher, pulled the NASDAQ and the S&P out of the doldrums for the day. Those are the stories the trade is looking to try to find more optimism. Folks, stay with us. We're going to talk about the right to repair here when Market Talk returns.
keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back, folks. Mike Pearson here sitting in for Jesse Allen today. In the equity markets, one category that has been closely watched here through the pandemic, especially over the past year, has been ag equipment manufacturers. Farmers have seen strong returns. There has been a tight supply of farm machinery out there on the market, so they have been writing big checks for both used and for new equipment, which has driven really those manufacturers' share prices much higher here over the past 2 years. But on the farm, there continues to be a challenge when that machinery breaks down. Farmers frequently don't have the tools on their operations. They don't have access to the tools to make those repairs, and that's created some tension. Many states have pushed to add right to repair legislation on the books. There's been a smattering of conversations about a federal right to repair piece of legislation. But in the meanwhile, the American Farm Bureau Federation has been working on a private solution, hammering out memorandums of understanding with ag equipment manufacturers to get them to share those diagnostic tools that farmers might need to use in repairing equipment. Joining us today to talk about it is Emily Buckman. She's the Director of Government Affairs at the American Farm Bureau Federation. And Emily, right to repair is something Farm Bureau has been working on for several years, isn't it?
It sure is, Mike. And thank you for having me on this morning. Just as you alluded to, right to repair has been top of mind for many Farm Bureau members for a number of years at this point. A piece of equipment is a major investment, and they have certainly become more complex, digitized over the years as technology has evolved. We also know that farmers and ranchers are way more dependent on technology than ever before. So when a piece of equipment breaks down, it can cause major disruptions on the farm. Just think profits, productivity, which is why it's critical that farmers and ranchers have access to the tools and information needed to fix the problem to get their machines up and running as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of ways to get these companies to provide that. You can require that they provide it through legal action and laws, or you can work together in a consultative manner to try to get these details out there. And Emily, my understanding is that AFBF has adopted sort of the consultative approach with these ag companies. Can you fill us in on the memorandums of understanding that AFBF has put together with ag manufacturers?
Absolutely. Our members prefer to find a solution within the industry. And so we pursued memorandums of understandings with various manufacturers. So to date, we're pleased to say that since January, we have secured 4 agreements at this point, most recently with AGCO and Kubota, which we believe cover roughly 70% of the ag machinery sold in the United States. These agreements did not happen overnight by any means. They were a culmination of several years of discussion that began with our member farmers and ranchers sharing their desire to find a right to repair solution within the industry. And we're extremely proud of our progress. These agreements are significant because they provide farmers and ranchers the opportunity to have access to documentation, diagnostic codes, to purchase parts and specialty tools directly from the manufacturer, as well as get assistance from the manufacturer. It's also important to note that they not only supply these tools to the farmer and rancher, but also give access to independent repair shops. We've heard from a number of members that dealerships were consolidating and folks are having to drive a little further than they used to. So independent repair shops can play a vital role in making sure that farmers and ranchers can repair their equipment in a timely manner and get it back up so that they're able to get back to their daily business.
So Emily, let's talk a little bit about the requirements here for the manufacturers under these MOUs. You mentioned diagnostic tools. You've got some records that are going to be available. What's the timeline look like, and how easy has it been to work with these companies to get this information out to the buyers?
Sure. Well, each MOU is specific to the manufacturer. They're all roughly 6 pages long, and they became effective as soon as they were signed. So I'll pivot to the AGCO and Kubota MOUs that were signed last week. So they became effective last week. And a part of these agreements is that we, American Farm Bureau, and the manufacturers have decided that we will come to the table multiple times a year to discuss, share information, discuss what our members have been, the benefits our members have seen from it, discuss concerns that they have. We could even, talk through technology that's evolved and reflect that in the MOU. So it's an iterative process, if you will, where we have the opportunity to take a look, see what's working, see what's not, and then update them accordingly.
Well, that'll be good. So it's going to be a process. I'm glad you used that word iterative, the way we're going to try it once, see what works, iterate again, try it again. That's kind of how these things go. But of course, whenever we're asking for something new from a manufacturer, we're offering a trade-off, we've got to give something up. Emily, what is American Farm Bureau giving up, I guess, in this instance, if anything, here to secure these MOUs?
Well, we have committed to this process. We've committed to this private sector solution. We've clearly gained significant momentum, and we hope to continue to have conversations with other manufacturers to secure additional MOUs in the coming weeks and months. This is something that we feel strongly about. We think that it's the best way to serve our farmers and ranchers, to get them a quicker solution to problems that arise in their day-to-day activities. We hope to see more come along the way, but we're really excited that we've got four already on the books.
Four on the books. You mentioned this is, these are equipment manufacturers, a lot of tractor manufacturers, but Emily, is American Farm Bureau willing to look in other aspects of ag engineering, whether it's planter design or small line of machinery? Would you be willing to pursue an MOU on any aspect of ag equipment?
I certainly think we would be open to it. Again, we have consulted with our membership this entire process, and we will continue to seek their feedback so that they can tell us what they want, what they need, what they'd like to see more of. It's Farm Bureau, and we take our direction from our members across the country. We've got Farm Bureaus, state Farm Bureaus in all 50 states, as well as one in Puerto Rico. So we rely on our members to direct us and tell us what they would like for us to do.
And they like to see that private solution. But Emily, when we're doing a private solution like this, oftentimes it does bump into legalities. In this case, I'm thinking recently there's been some stories about emissions changing on equipment, folks bypassing emissions now that they've got some tools to use on the farm. Will we have to write some laws to maybe address what right to repair unleashes down the line?
Well, the way that I see it is our farmers, our members, our ranchers, they're not interested in changing. They're just interested in repairing the equipment. So if Congress wants to take a look at that, we certainly will follow those efforts. Again, we're committed to this process. Our members are only interested in repairing their equipment, not changing it.
That is a really good piece of information. That is a crucial distinction when you're under the hood in a piece of equipment. Emily, this has been a long process for the Farm Bureau. I know you've worked with a lot of different companies, but there's a lot of work ahead. For folks who want to stay plugged in to the MOU issue in particular, where would you advise them to go to keep up with what Farm Bureau is working on?
Well, we have been advertising this on our websites. We are currently in the process of developing educational material as well. We work a lot through our state farm bureaus, so there will certainly be more information forthcoming. Obviously, we have had, we've rolled these out periodically over the last 6 months. So we're trying to get the word out as best possible. And generally, that happens through our state farm bureaus, who are constantly in communication with their county farm bureau members.
Absolutely, folks. Stay plugged in. A lot happens in the world of agriculture, and our stakeholder leaders are great resources to keep up to speed with how these things are changing. We've been talking today with Emily Buckman, the Director of Government Affairs at the American Farm Bureau Federation. And Emily, before we let you go, it's a Farm Bureau year. You oversee government affairs. Anything you want listeners to know here this week or think we need to have on top of our mind?
Well, there's always something going on in Washington, and like I said before, we are committed to these private sector solutions, seeking out more MOUs with manufacturers. As we look forward, we plan to have more conversations with our farmers and ranchers, as well as the manufacturers, on how these nationwide MOUs are working, how they can be improved and be updated as necessary. We also look forward to pursuing additional MOUs with other manufacturers to expand services for our members. Mike, I really appreciate you having me on today.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you the best of luck in securing these agreements and allowing farmers to get more work done under the hood. Folks, that's Emily Buckman, Director of Government Affairs at the American Farm Bureau. Emily, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, Emily's certainly right. There is never any shortage of things happening in Washington, D.C. I did want to make a note. I know we're a market show here. Jesse keeps it market focused, but we've also got a lot of farmers tuning in here to Market Talk. And I want to remind all of you, if you received the 2022 Census of Agriculture and you have not yet filled it out and sent it back, please do that. Those censuses are accepted until May 31st. Federal law does say if you receive one, you're required to complete and to fill it out. And it's a reminder, everybody, if you have sold $1,000 or more in gross sales of agricultural products over the past year, USDA considers you a farmer. Find your ag census, fill it out. The reason I encourage folks to do this is because this is the roadmap for how federal funding will be allocated in DC for the next 5 years. A lot of us in rural America want to make sure that we're seeing some return on our tax dollars. Well, if we want to make sure they're going to the right place, we've got to make sure the government has good information. Be honest, fill out as much as you feel comfortable filling out, but do be sure to get those in, get those submitted. Let's make sure rural America is well counted in this next farm bill period. Folks, stay with us. We're going to have more coming here on Market Talk today. We're going to hear from Arlen Suderman before we go into his conversations with Richard Rispin.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Mike Pearson, sitting in for Jesse Allen today here on Market Talk. We've seen the Supreme Court upend markets here in the past couple of weeks, upholding Proposition 12 in the state of California is going to change the amount and availability of pork in that state here beginning July 1. But we also had another very important case for agriculture pending before the Supreme Court, and that was Sackett versus the EPA. This is a case that has been pending for quite some time, questioning the true layout of the Clean Water Act. And it was decided on Thursday at the Supreme Court level. It was decided for the Sacketts. We had a Supreme Court clarify the Clean Water Act. The decision ended up becoming the Clean Water Act extends only to wetlands that have a continuous surface connection with the waters of the United States, i.e. with a relatively permanent body of water connected to traditional interstate navigable waters. This is a, I believe, a big win for agriculture. This verdict is still new. We'll have to spend a little time unpacking the details. That is, of course, where the devil lives. But overall, this would appear to answer the ag industry's concern that we need a Clean Water Act we can determine whether or not applies to our ground by looking at it with our eyes. It sounds as though this decision gives us that. We'll learn more in the coming days as the legal eagles determine really how far this decision will go. Before we go for the day, however, Rich Ristvedt of the American Ag Network had a chance to talk with Arlen Suderman here at midday for his thoughts about what's moving in these markets.
Rich Ristvedt with American Ag Network here for this market update. We're chatting with Arlen Suderman, chief economist at StoneX. Arlen, you know, when I look at the numbers, wheat is up today. Is that maybe some just position squaring before the long holiday weekend here, or is there something else driving those markets?
That's primarily what we're seeing here is coming up on a three-day holiday weekend, traders getting reluctant to really push it. We're seeing kind of consolidation across the board. We've pressed this wheat prices quite a bit, and so we're seeing some profit taking on some of those short positions as they've done. So knowing that the news headlines continue through the weekend while the markets won't be trading for the three-day period, we still have the rest of today and tomorrow to get through. But overall, these markets are lacking any real direction right now other than the path of least resistance remains lower.
Well, and you know what, this Memorial Day holiday weekend kind of kicks off the summer here. I'm looking at the livestock market and it looks to be a bit under pressure. What are you making of those numbers today?
Well, and I'd call that some similar type of dynamics, but we do have some fundamental factors as well. As we look at the hog market, we saw a big build in pork supplies in yesterday's cold storage report that shows that we're just continue to have soft demand and we're not getting rid of the pork that's out there and the supply continues to outweigh that demand. We need to see lower retail prices in order to clear it. In fact, pork supplies in the freezer are up 39% for belly supply. supplies from last year. So we've got quite a build there that we need to get through, and that usually means lower prices. When we look at the cattle market, though, tightening of supplies, strengthening cash markets. This time of year, we generally see weaker cash markets, but instead, we've seen most of this week's cash trade already happen, up a dollar to 171 in Kansas and Texas, and 180 to 182 in the northern feedlot district, up $2 to $3 in that area. So that's been providing some support to the market. But at the same time, we still got to worry about the consumer. We still got to worry about moving the product. The cold storage report did show that we were pulling those supplies down. Total beef stocks are down 448 million bushels, down 16% versus year-ago levels, and down 6% just from last month, which is double the normal monthly draw at the beginning of barbecue season. So we are tightening up. Those supplies are going up. Today's market may not be as impressive, but overall, this is a market that continues to see those tightening supplies versus demand.
Well, and regarding the debt ceiling talks, negotiators have been working all night, but we still haven't gotten word of any positive news. And now they're leaving for the Memorial holiday weekend themselves. Also, we heard that ratings agency Fitch is, we're on a negative credit watch currently. Where do you think these things are going to end up? What are we looking at here?
Yeah, negotiators are continuing talk. They went late into the night last night. They're not meeting today. I anticipate they'll be back at it at some point tonight or tomorrow. But Congress is breaking for Memorial Day holiday weekend. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said that he will tell his members to stay close enough to get back quickly for a vote. So he's still optimistic that there will be an agreement. He says there continues to be some progress occurring in these talks. Ironically, we really don't need to default on the debt, but if you don't default, if you don't have an agreement, it means the other option is to not pay benefits, whether it be wages to federal employees or Social Security benefits or something like that. So none of those options are good, and they'd like to see an agreement by the 1st of June.
Those have been comments by Arlen Suderman for the American Ag Network. I'm Richard Ristvet.
Thank you, Rich, for sharing Arlen's thoughts with us here on Market Talk. I did want to pick up the quick story of the debt ceiling negotiations that Arlen was talking about there at the end. As of Thursday afternoon, according to Reuters, President Joe Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy are nearing a deal. Sources say they're about $70 billion apart in total to a deal that would come to well over $1 trillion. Now, the Treasury Department has said that as of June 1st, so 1 week from today, that body could run out of funding, of money, and that would be a technical default. So we're 1 week away from that. Indications are good that some form or fashion of a deal will come together. We do not, as of this reporting, have any details on what that deal could look like, except for this interesting fact. Negotiators aren't planning to break down the cuts in discretionary spending programs like housing and education into individual categories. They're looking to just put a broad cap potentially on total discretionary spending and then let Congress do the hard work to figure out where and how those cuts might have to be applied. This story is going to continue. Do not have an agreement as of press time on Thursday. No doubt the trade will be watching this with continued interest as we get closer and closer to that June 1st deadline. Folks, thanks for listening to Market Talk today. I've been Mike Pearson sitting in for Jesse Allen. I will be filling in one more day tomorrow for Jesse while he is away. We're going to talk through a number of different factors that are working in these markets here in agriculture. Tune in then for more Market Talk.